Interview with Bernie Hansen, July 7th, 1977.
Yeah. Well, he wants to know a little bit about Eagle in the days that I knew it first. It was a nice little town, although I had seen quite a bit of Alaska before I got here. I thought this was the prettiest part that I had seen. And it was nice up around Whitehorse, that is, it wasn't in Alaska, but and around up in that country, Atlin and Carcross, Skagway is all nice country, but Skagway wasn't too good, it was too windy and stuff, but I liked some of the people that were there awfully well, and what I got acquainted with, but I come down here, and my first trip into Eagle was in 1929, and my wife beat me by several years, five of them. She come in the fall of 1925 to and come on down the river with Percy D. Wolfe from 40 miles and to teach the native school up there, 3 miles out of Eagle here, up the river. And she taught for about 14 years, I think it was. And we finally got married. So I didn't used to speak too much of her at first, because she was teaching school and I was out on the 70 miles, you know, 65 miles away. And come in the fall and you'd just stay around a few days and then you'd gone again and back out.
What was Eagle like back in 1929?
Yeah. Well, it was in Eagle was a lovely little town at that time. The streets, there was all, the Eagle was laid out to have streets and it was all surveyed out that way. And was kept that way, but where the roads are and the streets are was all grass and just like a lawn. The horses would keep it cropped, and the horses were just the same then as they are today, given a trail and they don't get off of it. You know, they have their trails and they follow them all the time. Well, and the people followed the horse tracks, and there were no roads as we have it now here, because there was no vehicles, there was no automobiles or anything of the kind to chew it up and make it a dusty, like it is now. And they even hauling gravel on it now, but and every place had a nice fence, either a picket fence or a wooden wire fence around it, every lot and house. And of course, some had several lots together and they'd be fenced completely. And everybody in town made their own living, because Uncle Sam or nobody else helped you, and you had to make your own. Well, a lot of the people, because Eagle was a very good place for gardening. Why, there was a lot of gardening went on in Eagle here. And they'd taken, and the last about three trips that the ferry boat or the steamboat made down the river would be loaded with produce, cabbage, carrots, turnips, everything, potatoes. And then go on down the river and be transferred way down the river and go further on down the river, way out. And some of it wound up, but lots of it wound up in Fairbanks even. And not through Circle, because Circle Road at that time, those days, wasn't any good at all. Just nothing but a footpath, you might say. In fact, they didn't have a road until long in the 30s. And in Ott and Shield, and Jack Shield and Charlie Ott. And but they sold out to the MC Company. And the MC Company run the store then until along in the, let's see. It was along in the late 40s or the early 50s. Yeah, it was in the 50s with the MC. They finally, they still had the store, but they finally let Horace Biederman take over their store and run the thing. Because Horace had a little store of his own over here that he bought from the Fish Boy when he was a young fella. And that's the stores we had. But there was a lot of stuff went to the MC store here that went to Chicken Country, to the 40 Mile. Powers hauled in the wintertime, four horse teams on sleds. Yeah.
Was there a steel hotel here then?
No, not at first. That was right here. Bob Steele's hotel was right where the building is back there. Only it was a big two-story building. I've got a picture of it.
Oh.
Yeah. I worked out on the 70 Mile at Alder Creek for quite a few years, and then some after the railroad got built, why, there were some that come in that way, and but most of that went to the Kuskokwim country. Yeah, that way. But the mail that went from here, a lot of it through here, went to right on down the river. Of course, in the summertime, why, as they call it, you know, so, and they did get there pretty fast, way down the river, and which was a lot faster than taking it on the railroad and then taking it across country to McGrath, hoping to get down the Iditarod to Yukon and so forth. But no, it went on down the river this way through here, a lot of mail. Even in the wintertime, the mail carriers had quite a lot of mail with them. And in from Dawson Eagle, old Percy D. Wolf, he was the old mail carrier that had been here for years. He was a young man, he started carrying mail, and he carried it as long as they had the dog teams. And, but he used an awful lot of the time until the last two or three years, he used horses. So, I got a picture of him out on the road, taken out of town, the old village up here. Going down, you can see his horse, stepping his horse. You thought he was his foot up in the air, making another step in front of him. Yeah. So I've made several trips with old Percy and drove the horse for him. You know, they have two horses, two sleds. Yeah, I've made a lot of trips with old Percy to Dawson back.
How long would it take to make a trip to Dawson?
It'd take, from here to Dawson, it'd take 4 days. And it's 104 miles by the river. But we, on the mail trail, we cut off quite a lot. There was a lot of portages. And that way it wasn't as long. But it still made 4 days. The first day, we come to Cassiar, where Percy was working, a little way from Percy Wolf's cabin. And he moved over, stayed at his place, and went on Cassiar. Hardly anybody there. But then, and the next day, he made 40 miles. He stayed overnight there at 40 miles with the old Pete Schultz. And there was a Mountie station there years ago. And then you left the next morning and you went down the river. And before you got too far, you made a horseshoe cross. You cut out a big bend here. And it technically half death there on that portage. You come to a place where there was a, it was just level. And then it went up like this and then leveled off again. It was just a small incline. And then, you know, it wasn't over about 4 foot difference, maybe 5 feet at the outside. And Percy was in the lead and I was coming behind him with the horse. And old Percy was setting the straddle. We're sitting on one of the handlebars, and here's the handlebar saying that you're sitting like this. There's the other handlebar over here, and the horse lives out this way. Well, when the horse, just as he got there, they get pretty smart. He gave a lurch and trotted a little bit to help kind of get that sled up that little hill so we wouldn't have to just slow down and pull it, you know, not actually pull it up. And, when the horse speeded up like that, why, it kind of jerked the sled, and old Percy fell off over backwards. And he had so much clothes on that when he hit in the snow, deep snow off the side of the trail, you know, he fell over backwards like he just put you in the mind of a big old black pig. Yeah, and he fell right flat of his back and he couldn't turn over. Because he went down in the snow so deep, you see. And he was hollering, whoa, 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 at the horse, you know. And the horse had already stopped, but he didn't know it, because he couldn't see out.
Couldn't see out.
No. But he was hollering, whoa, you know. And he was jumping and bucking and trying to turn over, and he couldn't do it. I had to get up and help him. I guess I never laughed so much in my life. But he was a get scared, you know. He forgot that I was with him, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it was, you know, if I hadn't been there to pull him out, I don't believe. I think he'd wouldn't have killed himself trying to get out and couldn't. Because he sure went and flashed that.
So where did you stay on the third night?
The third night you stay at old Fanning's place out here, about 22 miles up the river. And I'll tell you where it is on the river. It's just down from what they call Cathedral Bluff up the river here. And it's on this side of the river. And it's right at the mouth of the Real East Canyon. And above that Cathedral Bluff is quite a rapid with those big rocks. And the steamboat comes between the rocks there and the water. And what a fall up there, you know. Nice ride through there when you come down, because you're coming pretty fast. They have steering seat on the steamboat. It's nice. But, my big boat, it don't have any trouble going through there. And, some of these other small boats and stuff, you know, they have a harder time of getting through it. Power. But, just down from here, if you're coming down stream, here's the big. If you go right straight ahead, head for that there gap you see in the hill on this outside of the river. And that's where old Fanny's roadhouse was. He's a big old tall German, Texan. And a drooping mustache.
How long was that roadhouse in operation?
Oh, he was there for quite a long time. But he, in the flood of 37, it's flooded him out. He just didn't make it to the hill. Yeah, that's the only thing that saved his life, that his cabin was pretty close to the hill there. Yeah, he woke up and by God, he was in water. Yeah, when, you know, he's getting up onto his bed already, and he woke him up. Yeah, and he made it to the hill there. It wasn't very far. Oh, too much. He didn't any person be able to call on it. I mean, that far, wasn't they? Yeah. But that, heck, he didn't have anything. He didn't get to save a thing, you see. Yeah, because I'll tell you, when the jams below you there on some of those islands, it fills up so fast, it don't give you no time. Yeah. Now, like right down here one time, or down there on the sand, those sawdust piles down there, you know, with the sawdust, the old sawmills used to be. Well, I was in there sighting the fellow's rifle, and I got sighted in, and standing there talking about this new rifle and stuff. And all at once we heard a noise, it sounded like an earthquake. And he said, earthquake. And I said, no, I didn't feel anything in my feet. I couldn't tell it was an earthquake. And they said it sounded more like the icicles falling off a tree or something. And yeah, he said it sounded something like that. And then about that time, we heard the cracking again. Well, it was out on the ice. And we looked out there, and you could see it kind of coming up. And, oh, man, life is coming up fast. So I said, let's get the heck out of here. And we lit out of running right over to the point, and we come up the point over beyond your house over there, you know. We come right up that hogback, and then we run right along and went down in front of the mission there, the church out here. Went right down, and when we got down there by the old Riverside House, the old hotel, Jimmy Du Bois, that was in 37. No, that was the winter of 37. That was the winter of 36 and 7, because it was the spring when it went out. 37. And when we got there by Jimmy Du Bois' hotel, the water was coming over in the front of the NC store, starting to run into the store just that quick. And we didn't walk any. We run every bit of the way, because we're all young, you know, a lot younger. And we run all the way. I could run for miles then. And out in front of a dog team. But, no, that was some flood that time. That was in the winter. It was down there. And the next spring, now the ice went out in the 18th of December. Yeah, the 18th of December here. It went out and it jammed up down here on the lower bluff. Not this big first one, but you know, beyond that a little ways, there's a little lower wall along there. Well, that's where it jammed up. And, it was really a mess. And it jammed up there, and then it broke through. And you know, on the other side of this island, there was a big high bar through there. And the only time there was any water through there was when it was high water. And there was no chance of anything. And you could stand here, and it broke through and started running down the other side of this island. And now you can see where the... Hey! Steve!
Yeah. What do you remember about the old Riverside Hotel?
The old Riverside Hotel? Well, it was the fellow that run it, named Jimmy DuBois. And he went down on the Sophia. And he run it for quite a long time before that. And I bought a home that his lady friend used to have.
You were telling me about Jimmy DuBois.
Oh, yeah. And but he went down on the Sophia in 1918, I think it was, when he sunk and hit a rock out there and sank.
Where was that at? Where was that?
It's between, I think it's between Skagway. Oh, between it. I don't know just exactly where it is now, and I used to know it, but I can't recall now just where it is. But it's between Skagway and Juneau, I believe. And it hit this rock, and there was a Canadian boat wanted to take them all off. Yeah, no, the Sophia was a Canadian boat. And there's an American boat pulled up alongside and wanted to take all their passengers. But they was afraid that they thought this boat was going to stay on these rocks, you know, permanent, so it couldn't fall off or nothing. But the tides changed that idea, and they went down in the night. Yeah, never give them a chance to get off or nothing. They just slid off and that it. Yeah, I don't think there was a single survivor. Well, I think it was actually somewhere else in the down. Yeah.
Who was
the Islander was another one that I think was the Islander sunk out there off down below Juneau way. And I remember one fellow that was on him, Charlie Doyle, that was over on Stonehouse. Charlie Doyle and Art Langbank worked together there. And I knew them both outside. They come out in when they was, well, they got quite a little money ahead, and they bought up some of that land in Washington State there that they was putting irrigation on. And it was out of Selah, Washington there, out of Yakima way. And they bought, but Charlie Doyle, he also bought a lot of that Seattle tideland, waterfront tideland business. People all thought he was nuts. But in fact, he wasn't so crazy. He married a young woman, and when old Charlie died, he sold that stuff out. And she went to around Escondido, someplace in California, Los Angeles. And she bought up a lot of land there and put it into avocado. And she made herself wealthier that way. Yeah.
Who was running the roadhouse then, when you were here?
George Randolph and his wife. And their son today, Cy Randolph, Cyril Randolph, lives in Anchorage, and his wife and children. And he's, you know, he used to be, he worked for the, what's that, the international outfit there that has the international business in Fairbanks, Glenn Carrington and Company. Well, he worked for them as a young fellow in Seattle, and he got sent up to Alaska here. I don't know whether it was because he was born here, but he was sent up here, and he run the Glenn Carrington Company here in Fairbanks. And then later, actually, they had a branch in Seattle. They were in all of, did you make it?
What kind of activities were going on at the Roadhouse back when you first arrived?
Oh, it was just the old Roadhouse in Eagle here, the Jimmy Boys, they called it the Riverside House. And they had a soft drink place there. They made aerated waters. And they also had a bar. And they sold beer and the hard liquors. And there wasn't very many people in Eagle that patronized it or anything like that. All once in a while, and you fellas take a drink of beer or something like that, you know, and get a glass of beer. But as a rule, there wasn't much hard liquor consumed. But there was a few old timers that was here, like Johnny Olson and Johnny Simons. They would keep it pretty lively when they when they was here. Yeah, and old Bob Murray once in a while, he'd go, Bob Murray was that old man. But he was pretty good. But he'd go on a bender once in a while, and he'd wind up in Fairbanks in the hospital as a rule. The last time he went over there, why, Dr. Haglin, new doctor there then, he told him that he didn't quit it, but one more time of coming over here, Bob, and that'll be your last. And he was kidding. And, he managed to make about 95 or 6 before he died. Yeah, but it was a tough old brother. He went to the Pioneer Home in Ditka. He thought that he was a nuisance to me. I lived just opposite him, you see, and he kept thinking that he was a nuisance to me all the time, but I helped him because he kept it so he couldn't see. And but the old fellow, he was doing pretty good. But I told him, I said, Bob, you can stay there, I'll help you as long as you live. And he knew, but my gosh, he didn't want to be a bother. I had to tell him I wasn't a father, just somebody that I like to come and visit with him while I was waiting for my mom to get meals ready. See, last time I'd run over and she'd come to the, it was dark in the evening in the winter, fall late, like she'd come and flash the flashlight through his window. And that I knew that was for supper time. Yeah. But he went to, finally went to the home at Sitka. Passed away there, oh, 2 or 3 years later. And, it was pretty much a place. It wasn't too many people that the tourists. There were lots of people on traveled on the steamboats, but they didn't stay overnight much. You know, in the summertime there was no travel much on the river. There was more travel in the wintertime. Dogs, you know, or people walking. You'd be surprised the number of people used to walk. Yeah, just snowshoes going in the country themselves, by themselves, with a little pack on their back.
Coming down from Dawson?
Yeah, come on down the Booker, Greta, the lower end of the river. Yeah. So as far as that's concerned, some of them went as far as clear to Nome. Yeah. Oh, they'd go on, you know, and there was the old mail carriers were still carrying mail then, you know. And the roadhouses were all kept up. And from from here, he went to first, he went to Heine Miller's. And that really wasn't a road camp, but he'd fix you up there. And then there was the next stop was Nation. And from Nation it was down to Peterman's place, to Charlie Creek. And the next place was Cold Creek. Then the next place on Cold Creek would be Woodchopper. And then it'd be down the 30 mile, 28 mile. And that really wasn't Roadhouse, but the old fellas had let you stay there. And then the next place was Circle. Yeah. And from Circle, there was, you just about had to make your own way from Circle on down, but you could stay with, oh, there was one or two trappers between there and Fort Yukon you could stay with. But they really weren't roadhouses or anything like that.
How many people were living in Eagle when you first came in?
When I first come in that first winter, I was here with the people from out on the 70 mile, all that come in that would come in. And but there'd still be a few left on the 70 mile, not many, but there'd be old Yost, he never come in. And let's see, and old Gus Nelson from Broken Neck, he didn't come in either. He had asthma so bad he didn't come out, didn't come in. But all the rest of them, well, there was always somebody left at Crooked Creek too. And there wasn't always somebody at Fox Creek. And most generally there's nobody there in the winter. Other than that, why, there was, when everybody that would come in was coming, and from out to the road here a little ways, probably old Dover would be in that was there on this here place out here at Gravel Gulch, you know, where the station was there with the government rest place there, where they had the barn for the horses and the house for a cabin for people, you know, traveling. Out there at Gravel Gulch. And
were there more people here in the winter than there were in the summer months?
Oh yeah, because in the summer months everybody is out out on the creeks. And old Bert and I, we'd always come in. Now a lot of times we'd come in for Thanksgiving, and we'd stay till after New Year's, because he had a cabin, the last cabin up past the old red barn back in the brush there, but it's all fallen in now. It used to be a nice little house there.
That's where Bert Bryant.
Yeah, it, the fella that built the cabin was Matt. Wait a minute. But he was a blacksmith for the post that built Bert's cabin there. Stay in when I come into town. And then the post had two blacksmiths. One guest Samich and
what was Jeff's last name?
Samich.
Samich?
Yeah, Samich, yeah, Samich. Yes, Samich. And he lived in that cabin where just, you know, that little cabin that sets in the front corner out to the road, right up here on the other side of Bob Murray's old place, where, you know, where Johnny Ostrander lives on the last house on that side of the street going out.
Right before the school?
Yeah, just before the school. Well, he's just this side of that, but on this side in that little cabin in there.
Oh, yes.
Well, we call that Johnny Simons' cabin. It belonged to his sister, and she still owned it in California. She lives in Brawley, California, down in Southern California, close to, I guess the name of that place, too. But
that's Johnny Simons' sister.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
may have her name written down someplace.
Yeah, you
I'll
may
have to
have,
check.
Yeah, probably have.
Would she be an older lady now?
Oh, yeah, heck yeah. Right up there. Oh, yeah, she's way up there now, yeah, you bet. Yeah. And, Bob Mary, he lived in the, that little cabin this side of where Johnny Simon's place was. But Jess Amish, she lived in it for quite a long time. And but I think that he bought it or something. Johnny Simon bought it. And then when he died, it went to his sister. Yeah.
Was the church in operation when he came in?
Yeah, the church was in operation. And his name was the fellow that was running the church. His name, I'm pretty sure, was Moody.
Moody.
Yeah, if I can remember correctly. And he was from New Zealand. Yeah, he was an Episcopal minister from New Zealand. And then later, when he moved out of here, why, a fellow by the name of Fullerton came here from Tannenaw, and he'd been Episcopal minister there, and in fact, he was the brother of Bishop Rowe's wife. Yeah, he was Mr. Fullerton's sister was Bishop Rowe's wife. Yeah. And he came up here, and he's the one that built the church that's here now, and the parish, you know, the house. He didn't do it all himself. He had quite a little bit of labor that helped him, you know. Yeah, and all of that lumber that's in that building come out of the old hospital up there.
Up at the fort.
Yeah, up at the fort, yeah, the old hospital building. And then I bought the rest of what was there at the old hospital, and I figured on building myself a new place with what was left of it. There was still plenty of it. Why, I had to break my hips, and I couldn't do anything like that any then, you know, so I just had to give it up. And different ones helped themselves do it for a long time, and took all of the plumbing fixtures and stuff out of it. And there was a lot of pretty good pipe left there, you know. And down in underneath that old church there was a lot of pipe. I mean, that old hospital up there, you know. But I took some of it out and piled it up. But I'm not sure, but I think I know who come and got it, but it disappeared.
Was there any kind of activity up at the fort when you first came in?
No, the only activity up at the fort when I first come here was the ACS office was still running, you see. The whole communication system was still working. And they had wireless station, but it was down here on the flat where the airport is now. And there was three or four buildings in a row there, and the old jail and a lot of the warehouses were still up through where the middle of the airport is now. And that building, that warehouse, that first warehouse up there was way down where it is now. They hauled that up there with that little old first tractor they had. But of course they had to use a lot of cables and blocks and pulleys and stuff in order to move it, you see.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they finally got the old thing up there.
Who was operating the old ACS when you came in?
The old ACS, the fellow that was operating it was Bill Glasgow.
Bill Glasgow.
Yeah, Bill Glasgow was operating. And then he left, and he had this Paul Glasgow. He had a brother by the name of Paul Glasgow that married one of the Traub girls, a chicken, Nancy Traub. And he got in an airplane wreck of some kind, but they never did find any of them. Going to St. Lawrence Island, not St. Lawrence, but Kodiak Island. He was riding this fella in the airplane, and they must have went into the drink someplace, you know, but they never did find either air of them. Nothing.
Nancy Traub Glasgow is still living in Fairbanks?
No, Paul Glasgow, I don't know where Paul is. The last I knew, he was around Hope, Alaska. And he married a girl that had three or four little children. And when he was in Fairbanks, operating in Fairbanks there, Paul Glasgow and I, he used to take his wife and I used to take Mrs. The old lady, by God, she's getting quite old now, old lady. Heck, she's a good old girl, too. Got several sons, and isn't it funny? I'm thinking of everything else but what I want to think about. Damn it! You're 90s now, some, you know. But I used to take her to the shows. The four of us would go, and then we'd come back, come out, and stop at the Model and have something to eat, you know, and then take them home. Well, of course, he'd be home, but I'd take an old lady. Oh, she had a whole bunch of boys. Yeah. Boy, she was a working machine, that old girl. See, that son's getting awful.
Why, is Nancy Traub Glasgow still alive?
Yeah. Paul Glasgow, though, the one that she married, of course, he'd come up from an airplane wreck. But Nancy, and I just can't think of her name now either. And I know both of them, that is, I know her husband pretty well, too. They come and visit us a lot. Yeah.
Where do they live?
They live in Fairbanks.
Right in Fairbanks.
Yeah, they live right there in Fairbanks. Yeah. And there's another one of the Traub girls, too. And one of her daughters is working out at the tiny home now.
One of Nancy Traub's daughters?
No, not Nancy Traub, but Anna Traub. I just can't think of her name. She worked in Nancy's store for a long time when they come. She was married to Gordon Springbent, a man a lot older than she was. And they got married over there at Chicken. And he come over to Fairbanks, and he was an awful good woodworker. And Pan American got a hold of him. You know, the old wings on airplanes was all wood structure, you know. And he was wonderful with wood. So that's how he come to be working for Pan American. But they come to Fairbanks, and he died, Gordon did. And she married another fella later, quite a long time after that. But they lived on 7th Street someplace there when she was working at the NC. And I used to see her quite regularly, you know, of course I'd known her first since she was a chicken as a girl. And one time I was in, went into what they call the mug up in the spring. It's people come from the outside and all over, you know, to find their mug up, as they call it. And it's a nice trip because a big part of the people that are at the Pioneer Hole all go to the mug up. They rent some big hall there, you know, and have big tables all around it, you know, in the place. And they really throw quite a wing-ding there. And I was sitting in between Art Loftus and Dorothy, his wife. they lived down in Coos Bay, Oregon. And the year before that, why, they drove clear in here. And they'd stopped at Scobie's place out there, you know, old Scobie's old place. And she said, we filled up with gas. She said, I never thought anything about it. She said, when we started away, she says, he started up that hill. She says, I told him, she says, you're going the wrong way. He said, no, by God, I ain't. He says, I'm going into Eagle. He says, I'm not going outside until I see old Barney Hanson. And they drove period here, you know. Mom and I were just sitting having our supper when they come, drove up in front. And my God, when they went out and looked, it was all Art and Dorothy. I kind of thought it was a quite a little honor, by God, for a fellow to drive all that far. Just
sure.
To see old Barney Hanson, yes,
sure.
Damn if I didn't. And the next fall, they were back up again, the same as they was this fall. or was it last? No, it was this spring, rather, not in the fall. And, we had a great get together, you know. By God, she come and she grabbed me, and I thought she was never going to let loose. But that a year, a couple of years back, why, it's been 5 or 6 years ago, I guess, something like that. And I was sitting in between Dorothy and Art, and she come over and she grabbed old Art, you know, Nancy did. And she was talking, and she finally quit looking at him, and she looked at me. She says, ain't you Barney Hanson? I said, yeah. Oh, she says, I am. He'd been drinking a little bit. Oh, boy, she put on a show there for a while. Everybody in the building pretty near was looking her way. Pretty near got a crying jag. Yeah, telling about how she used to think what a wonderful guy old Barney was. The old buzzard.
Was there any courthouse in operation here when you first came in?
No, it wasn't. He'd moved to Fairbanks. Yeah, no, there was nothing in operation. The only thing in operation was the jail. And the only time anybody got put in it was when I threw them in. Drunken bums. Some of them said they couldn't be put in there, but I showed every one of them.
Were you the town marshal?
No, I just was keeping law. Yeah, I got to be, they always seemed to vote me in as the chairman of the council all the time. And I just figured that the damned old bums are cussing and rude around, you know, and tell you what they're going to do and what they... Yes, I just grab them and pick them up and throw them, heave them in there when I got to the door for somebody to open it, and I did. Some of them, I guess, I was a little rough with.
What other kind of businesses were there in town? Was there any, where did people bring in their furs?
Their furs?
Yeah.
Well, now... They brought the furs in and sold most of it to the MC company. And there was two stores here. That is later. There was Frank Fish. He started a little store over there, and he sold out to another trapper. And making home brew, making it. Pete Somerville was the other storekeeper besides the NC. And he bought fur, and so did the NC buy fur. And then when the airplanes got to flying around, why, they got to bringing fur bars. And it got to be so that you could get a better price for your fur, because these here fur bars was by the, you know, bidding against one another. And the fellas got quite a little bit more money that way than they did before for the same kind of fur.
When was Frank Fish and Pete Somerville buying furs? What years?
That was in the late 20s, or about from the middle 20s. And he didn't sell out to Horace, Somerville sold out to Horace Biederman, that's right. Yeah, he did. But the fur, most of it, and a lot of the trappers sent their fur outside to the Seattle Fur Exchange or to the Tacoma, the West Coast Grocery, the West Coast Fur Sales, which was the West Coast Grocery Company, you might say. But they bought an awful lot of fur, too. Yeah, Seattle Fur Exchange, or those two is where all the fur went to.
Could they get a better price by going that way?
Yeah, they got a pretty fair price. A lot of them would request that wholesale sales come, you see, and they'd take the fur that the fellas had sent in a bunch, and that let these here fur buyers look at it and offer what they'd take, you see, to give for the fur. And they'd say whether they thought it was a fair price or not, the company did. But they was pretty good and pretty liberal with the sellers. Yeah. Oh, and then there was fur in Canada too. Fur went to Canada. There was Montreal fur sales and stuff, Yeah. And there was fellas trapped in Canada, and there was fellas Canadians trapped in Alaska. Yeah. Yes, it was a pretty good country then. Yeah. And most all of the stuff that we got from Dawson, near an Eagle. Because it was too far to go by Fairbanks way, by circle, clear across over the hills, quite a long way. It was only 104 miles up the river, you see, to Dawson. And in the fall of the year, when you wanted to go, you'd just tell them that boat there is the one that you want to take to Dawson. And the fellas would load it for you on the front deck of the steamer Yukon, And when you got to Dawson, they'd unload it for you wherever you wanted it put. And when you got ready to come home, if they weren't coming back down, you'd just get in your boat and drift on down the river to home here. So you always stopped at all the places, though. You see everybody,
Was old John Powers still in town when you first came in?
Oh, yeah. I knew him. Oh, he didn't leave until a long time after I come. Yeah, old John Powers, in fact, I drove the pallbearer rig at his death over at Fairbanks and during the war there. And that was along about 40, about 44, something like that, when he kicked off over there. And I know that I drove the... They couldn't find somebody, that knew in amongst the old folks at the pallbearers that knew how to drive, only me. And there was quite a few fellas from Fairbanks and some from the 40 mile. Old Jack Brooks after the service was over, he was a Catholic, old John Powers was, And when they had the services about him, this there priest, he was up there, and he had the kind of a rig in there, and they had a big white, like a silk handkerchief, bandana, He had this over the top of this, and he'd go through all hocus pocus stuff, And when we was on the way out to the graveyard down Birch Hill. Why, I made the remark, I said, by gosh, I said, that father had that great Raymond lead all to hell in this hocus pocus stuff. And this old Bob Murray, not Bob, this Bob Murray, but his name was Murray. But, and anyway, there was old Jack Brooks, he took it up right away, you know. And he said something about him, and I forget now just what it was he said, but you know, it was something that was, he was hating on this Bob Murray, being a Catholic fella, you see, this Murray. And he was just keeping it up, telling him about what a wonderful hocus pocus guy this was. Boy, he sure could bring out and have all kinds of stuff coming out from underneath that. Give him time, he said. And, Murray, he didn't like it a bit, but he kept still.
Did you know the old Doc Hamilton?
Oh, yeah. I knew old Doc pretty well. He always called me Bernie.
Bernie.
Yeah, and I stopped one time at Sitka and went up to the Pioneer home there to see the old fella. And I had been trying to get him to go to the home a long time before he did go. And I'd been out to the home there, Sitka, you know, and I knew what it was like. I told him, I said, I know the people that they're running it. Not Hanson, but kind of something like it, Henson or something like that. And boy, they were awful nice people. In fact, I got a letter and papers to fill out to try to get into the home out there. That's been locked up close to. And so she wrote and told me, she says, you fill him out, Barney, she says. And she says, when you get down here, she says, you will be my bridge partner this winter.
What do you remember about old Doc Hamilton?
Oh, he was a pretty good little old Doc. I guess he couldn't do much work, but he was always doing something, you know, the best he could. But he kept the barns warm in the winter and cleaned out for John Powers when he'd get there.
Out at Liberty.
Yeah, out at Liberty, and he'd always keep water for the horses, have it warmed up for the horses to drink when they got there. And the barn was warmed up for the horses when they got there. And he always kept plenty of wood on hand. He'd go up, he went up the road this way from there on the trail, and cut the wood up on the hillside there and skidded it down. And old John had hauled it in the winter down to Liberty, and the old fella keep it sawed up, you know. Yeah, and Powers had a pretty nice cabin there himself, but that there fella that worked in the road commission, that Anderson, why, he burnt the place down. It was a nice cabin, too. And he burned it down, and then that left the only place there to stay was in old Doc Hamilton's place. But I finally talked to old Doc Hamilton to go into the home. And so the next trip I made outside, why, I stopped at Sitka, went on a flight, on a trip to take me to Sitka, and just to see old Doc. And he says, his first words was, I said, well, Doc, I said, how do you like it here at home? Oh, my God, Barney. Bernie says, if I'd known there'd been anything like this, I'd been here years ago.